Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast.
So, welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. My name's Julian Taylor. I am in Red Bull headquarters in London today. So that's a bit of a change from normal. We'll get onto that in a moment. First of all, let me introduce my shiny-headed co-host.
Hello, everyone. Langdon DeMint, who is partially in the Red Bull headquarters via computer screen.
And we have a third member of the contingent today.
Welcome, bald lady.
She's not bald. Emma Hyde, who is the CEO of Wings for Life in the UK. Emma, do you want to just introduce yourself and introduce Wings for Life?
Sure. Thanks for having me, guys. So as you said, I'm the CEO of Wings for Life in the UK. We are a global foundation dedicated to finding a cure for spinal cord injury. So we operate in the UK, in the US and Austria, and we raise funds to fund research to find a cure.
Okay, which is absolutely amazing. Emma was very clear when we first talked today that she knows nothing about health and safety, but she knows quite a lot about spinal cord injuries and about the research that's happening. The reason for the podcast, I suppose the reason for doing this, because it's a bit left field, you might say, why are you in Red Bull headquarters, is because Wings for Life was a charity that was started by the late Dietrich Mateschitz, who was the founder of Red Bull, and his friend, hopefully I can get this pronunciation right, which is Heinz Kinnegartner.
Okay. Spot on.
And Heinz was a 2-time motocross world champion, and his son was actually injured in a charity motocross race and had a spinal cord injury. So that was the origin of the charity in the first place.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So Heinz was actually one of the very first Red Bull athletes back in the day. And as you know, Red Bull today have an amazing athlete program. But back in the 80s in Austria, they were just starting out. Heinz was obviously really successful, 2-time motocross champion, as you said, and was doing really well for himself. And his son, Hannes, was very much following in his footsteps. He was just a teenager when he was actually filling in for his dad, Heinz, in a charity motocross race. And the race set off as normal, but on the very first corner, the rider in front of him came off his bike, and Hannes unfortunately didn't have time to stop. So he went over and sustained a spinal cord injury.
I think one of the things we've talked a bit about the sort of the effects of spinal cord injuries, and I think everybody recognises it's a lifelong sentence, isn't it, if you have a spinal cord injury?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really devastating injury. And I think when people imagine someone with paralysis, they probably imagine somebody in a wheelchair, which in some cases, in many cases, actually, being a wheelchair user is typically the end result. But that is only the tip of the iceberg in terms of what spinal cord injury can do. It affects every single part of your body below the injury site. Yeah. So that affects how your organs function. So consider that your bladder, your bowels, your sexual function. In some cases, if it's a very high injury, the ability to be able to use your lungs. Yeah. Temperature control, you become more susceptible to infections, pressure sores. I mean, really, the list goes on. So it's an incredibly devastating injury, and not just for the person affected, but for those around them as well, because it can really just blow up someone's life.
We've talked before with a guy called Jason Anker, who was injured in the workplace, and it was interesting listening to his story, wasn't it, Langdon, where he really talked about those sort of ripple effect of it. It's not just the individual, it's the family, it's all the sort of close relatives. It's a real ripple effect in across the whole of somebody's life.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, whilst a lot of people who've sustained a spinal cord injury would probably love to walk again, it really isn't the top of their list, because the thing that is really debilitating on a day-to-day level is those things like your bladder and your bowels, because that is just constant.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very tricky injury, and you know, one that we are determined to help cure.
Okay, we'll talk more about that in a moment. I suppose the reason for this conversation today, it kind of started probably in May of last year, and there's an annual event which you can talk more about in a moment, and it's called the World Run, and I've run the World Run a few times now.
Good. How far have you gone?
Very slowly. I've got to say, I've gone further every year. So I got up to 10 miles last year.
Very good.
So I was pleased with 10 miles. People will start to understand that a bit more when you explain the format of the race. But as I was running it, and you can run it and you use an app and you've got your headphones on and you're getting stories from Red Bull ambassadors as you're running, it just really struck me that this had a real relationship back to our world of sort of workplace health and safety, because when you think about how people sustain these injuries, quite a common cause is in the workplace. Be interesting, Emma, what are the sort of statistics around how people sustain these types of injuries?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, because I think a lot of people have this imagined idea that it's, you know, extreme sports people, yeah, who are kind of doing crazy stunts and putting themselves in danger, but that could not be further from the truth. In fact, 50% of accidents are sustained are caused by road traffic accidents. So that's something that I would say the majority of us all do in our everyday lives. We get in a car or we walk beside a road. So that's by and large the main cause. And then after that, we have falls, which is around 70%. And again, of course, you can fall anywhere. You can fall at home, you can fall out in public, and of course, you can fall in the workplace as well. And then after that, it's kind of an amalgamation of a few different causes. It could be things like violent crime, or, you know, military, random kind of occurrences. But the remaining 9% is sports. And of that 9%, only 3% is made up of extreme sports. So that actually ranks very low in terms of causes.
Emma, I'm curious, from a statistical standpoint, what kind of numbers are we usually seeing around the spinal injuries?
So worldwide, the WHO estimates between 250,000 and 500,000 every year. Obviously, the nature of accumulating that information is typically quite tricky. So I would say that's probably a really conservative estimate. There are probably a lot more people being injured than that every single year. In the UK, it's funnily enough, I was in a meeting about this yesterday, but the numbers have pretty much doubled in the last decade. So in England alone, we're talking about 3,000 people every year, which is, if you break that down, that's 8 patients a day, one being injured every 3 hours, which is really, really shocking.
It's interesting because, you know, like just back injuries, for example, in the U.S., for specificity, you know, they say, well, globally, actually 80% of adults will face a back injury at some point, you know, but 80%, up to a quarter, could face re-injury. And then I think in the U.S., there were 2 million is what they're now estimating back injuries. And that's just, a lot of those are work related. And then you start, or poor postures. And then you go even worse case where, you know, what we're talking about here, to me, it really does kind of tie that picture that it's all across the board, whether it's, you know, in the workplace, whether it's not, but they all have the same ultimate effect. And that's that they can impact the personal life and your community life.
And I think that the other thing, just sort of really preparing for this, was the fact that it can happen to anybody. It's not, there's no discrimination here, is there? It could happen to anybody, and it could happen sort of so easily. I'm really interested as well. This the charity's been going for a while now. You've raised a lot of money.
Yes.
Some amazing research projects that you've supported. And I mean, I think there's currently in the region of 63 projects at the moment. And I think you talked about 300 maybe over the span of the charity. What are the things that those research projects are doing, and how is it that Wings for Life is supporting them?
Well, let me take you back a bit just to, I suppose, paint a bit of a picture and give you some context. So I talked a little bit about Hannes earlier. When he was injured, he was just a teenager, and that was back in 2003. Hannes is nearly 40 now. So he's been living with his injury a long time. But back in 2003, there wasn't a single clinical trial in existence. There was nothing on the horizon either. And there were a few research projects going on, but they were mainly, you know, basic projects within the laboratory, and they weren't being furthered into clinical studies. And that's really the reason why Dietrich and Heinz decided to set up Wings for Life, because they did not think that a lack of funds should prevent an outcome in terms of curing spinal cord injury. And after doing some research, that's really what they'd discovered, that it was a neglected area of research. There was no government funding, so to speak, of, and anything that was in existence was kind of funded by private individuals. So they took that bold, visionary ethos that has made Red Bull into the brand it is today and applied that to Wings for Life. And thought, you know, if no one else is going to do this, we will cure spinal cord injury. So we've been set up with that same like visionary influence. And I suppose back then, when we first started, it was a hope, but now it's more of a belief. And the reason for that is that we've been funding research projects, like you say, 300 to date, over the last 20 years, and we're really starting to see breakthroughs now. In fact, there's been more progress in the last 5 years than there has been ever before. So there is now legitimate, not hope, but belief that we're going to see a cure, certainly within our lifetime.
Wow. Which nobody ever thought would happen, did they?
No, absolutely not. But then you think about HIV, for example, you know, that was a death sentence in the 80s, and now it's a manageable illness. Testicular cancer, for example, it's now 98% curable. That is only possible through medical research. And if you just look back to the COVID pandemic just a few years ago, it just shows if you have enough money, enough resources, and enough minds, anything is possible. So we believe it, and that's why we're raising the money to invest in those projects.
And the will, I suppose, as well. There's got to be the will there, hasn't there?
The passion, And we all are extremely passionate about this. Yeah.
The thing that interested me as well, and I'd never really thought about this, was why this attracted so little funding and research sort of before Wings for Life came along. What's different about spinal cord injury, which seems to be so severe?
It's a matter of economics. Yep. So, I mean, I said some of the stats earlier around numbers of people living with spinal cord injury. It's a significant amount. Yep. But if you compare that to people who have cancer or heart disease, for example, it's not as significant. So therefore, it's not going to attract as much funding. It's not going to be deemed a profitable endeavor for pharmaceuticals, for example, because they're not going to get, you know, the return that they would on widespread drugs or widespread treatment.
So how do you raise the money? And I know one of the ways you raise the money. So I think we've got to talk about that. It'd be interesting to talk about World Run and also other ways that people can support and help Wings for Life.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about our partnership with Red Bull.
Yeah.
And we have been supported by Red Bull since our inception. And the way that they support us is that they cover 100% of our costs, which is really, really unique in the charity sector, which means that we can say every single penny, dime or cent that is raised globally from our supporters goes directly to research. So obviously we are so grateful to Red Bull for that support. And then other than that, we fundraise in our own ways as any other charity would, typically through partnerships, through trusts and foundations, through individuals, and also through our event program. And our biggest event, which we've obviously talked about a little bit already, is the Wings for Life Wild Run. Yeah. And that was 10 years old last year.
Yeah.
And it's a huge event for us. And the impact that it's had in terms of our funding has been enormous. So we went from being a pretty successful charity to essentially raising millions every year, and those millions has been the game changer in terms of what we've been able to fund. So that has allowed us to move from the more basic and preclinical research projects into clinical trials. And that's what we all want, right?
Yep.
We all want to see treatments in humans,
yep,
and we want to accelerate that. And that has been down to the Wings for Life Wild Run.
Cool. One other thing before we get into the World Run, because I didn't really, I was reading sort of some of the promotional information, and it was the three letter acronym that sort of caught my eye, which was ATP.
Oh yes.
And I wondered whether you could talk about ATP and tell us what that is.
Yes. So ATP stands for Accelerated Translational Program.
Yep.
And a little bit in terms of what I just said about the World Run, we knew that we had been funding some really promising basic research. But what was happening was, is that those research projects would have findings, but in order to take it into clinical studies, you need so much more than just promise in a laboratory. Okay, so you need legal support, you need governance support, you need commercial support, you need to be able to navigate your way through into that environment, which is really complex. And for scientists, often they don't have that know-how. They're absolute geniuses in the laboratory, but you know, we're talking about really complex regularity procedures. So the ATP was set up to meet that need and to give researchers and scientists the support they needed to take promising research in the laboratory through into clinical trials. So the ATP program, I think the last count was 9 major clinical trials. And that has really made the difference. And as I said, we're starting to see real breakthroughs. Patients are regaining functionality. And in some cases, we've actually seen patients walking again. And this is the direction that we need to be heading.
So navigating the red tape, getting through the red tape to
exactly that,
to get stuff done.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's known as the Valley of Death.
Is it?
Yeah. Where promising research projects just fall down because they can't get to the next stage.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. We're kind of bridging the gap across the Valley of Death.
And it's great to see charities who are, I mean, when you think about how this probably started in the early days, sort of the way charity's grown, the knowledge has grown, and actually probably changed direction slightly in terms of what you've got to do to be successful. I think it's really interesting listening to this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most kind of credible charities these days run like businesses.
Yep.
You know, we have budgets, we have targets.
Yep.
We're always talking about return on investment.
Yep.
You know, it's no different. And you know, I say fundraising is a bit like a sales job, except you're not selling a product or a service, you're selling hope.
And I think part of it is selling events. So let's do that, because I think what we'd like to do is I think the great thing about the World Run is anybody can do it.
That's right.
That's one of the most amazing things about it. It's not, you don't have to be a runner. Anybody could do it. So tell us about the format for the World Run, because I think we've kept people hanging on long enough.
Yeah. So as you said, the World Run is for everybody. So don't be put off by the World Run if you're not a seasoned runner. It's got a number of USPs, and the first one being that it is truly a global running event. So it's the only running event in the world where everybody takes part at exactly the same time. So in the UK, it's a very civilized 12 noon. But if you're in Australia, you could be running through the night. In America, you could be running at dawn. But it really is a global community of runners. And it's really exciting to feel part of something that everyone's doing at exactly the same time.
I think we could even get a guy in Nashville doing this, couldn't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And no excuses, because the second USP, if you like, is that there is no set distance and there's no finish line. So instead of you going out and saying, right, I've got to run this 5K or 10K or half a marathon, etc., everybody starts running at exactly the same time. And I say running, but you know, you can do a nice leisurely jog, yeah. You can walk. If you're a wheelchair user, you can push in your wheelchair. So it's fully accessible, fully inclusive for everybody. And after 30 minutes, you are chased down by what's known as the catcher car, which is...
I hate the catcher car.
It's essentially a moving finish line. Yep. So it turns a concept of a typical running event on its head, because the fastest person finishes last, yep, as opposed to first. Yep. So everybody gets to finish, everybody gets the distance, everybody is a winner. Yep. And the third, I suppose, unique aspect of this run is, as I've mentioned before, our costs are covered by Red Bull, which means 100% of all the entry fees go directly to research. So you can sign up as a participant and your entry fee is going directly into our research, yep, portfolio. None of that is going on the event costs. You can choose to fundraise if you wish, but unlike other charity events, you don't have to, because the entry fee is already doing your bit.
So the car sets off, Emma.
Yes.
How quickly is it going when it sets off? Or am I testing you there?
They keep changing it. I believe it's 15 kilometres an hour at first, but yep, please don't quote me on that. But all the information is on the website, okay, wingsforlifewildrun.com.
So the car sets off slowly, the car gradually speeds up.
Correct.
And the idea is you're trying to just run as far as you can before the car catches you.
Exactly that.
And there are a couple of ways you can do this, aren't there? So there are some live events across Europe. And I think, do you know where those are? I think there's Austria. There's obviously Austria, because that's...
Yes.
The home of it, yeah.
So Austria, Germany, yep, Poland, and Croatia,
yep,
I believe. But again, check the website. And then in the UK, you're able to run wherever you are within the app. But if you would like to join an organised event in the UK, we've got a few different live events. We do a big one in Battersea Park in London. And then we're also going to be having events in Brighton and Hove, Coventry, Nottingham, Cardiff and Manchester. So wherever you are in the UK, there'll be a location close to you. But if you can't be bothered, you can just simply roll out your front door and run wherever you would typically do your runs or walks.
Yeah, I was just saying to Emma as well, I looked like a complete lunatic the other year because I just did it locally and people wondering why I just kept going around the same old loop time and time again. But I can also attest to Battersea's a great event.
It is. So, it's really fun.
So you can run around the park. You can run around the track that's at Battersea. The best thing about being at Battersea is there's an endless supply of Haribo and also certain energy drinks by a certain drinks manufacturer. I think you can guess who's those are.
That's right, yeah. But yeah, we also put on a little bit of entertainment. And like you say, there's the athletics track on site, which is really, really great for wheelchair users.
Yep.
So if you're going to be pushing in your wheelchair, I would highly recommend you come down to Battersea because it's really well set up.
Yep.
Joel, there is a run in the Nashville, Tennessee area. So,
wow.
In the US, we have some locations as well.
Is that you committing to doing the world run this year then, Langdon? Did I hear that? I think I heard that, didn't I, Emma?
I heard that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get very far.
Doesn't matter.
I'm more of a bike rider worker out than I am a runner, but the car will run me over when I get shin splints. But yes, let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can do.
Well, the other thing you can do is you can do it with the kids. Ed, who I work with, did it last year, and he did it carrying his 3-year-old daughter.
Oh, how lovely.
And she's really excited. She wants to do World Run again this year. So Ed's going to do it carrying his daughter. So that's a shout out to Ed.
Oh, well done, yeah. Ed. That's lovely.
I think the other thing I just wanted to really, really sort of shout out was this can be something that can be a really good corporate event for businesses.
Definitely.
We're a global business. We've got offices in India, Australia, Chicago, UK. And we did it as a company last year. So how does that work, Emma? How can a business get involved with World Run?
Well, there are a couple of ways a business could get involved. So first being just promoting it to their staff,
yep,
which is great. And you can set up a team. And we have lots of organizations that do that. But even better would be for that business to actually buy some vouchers for their workforce. And this can be part of their CSR initiatives, D&I initiatives, just team building, because it's a really nice way of getting people together and a bit of friendly competition. We have a really good Teams functionality on our website, so you can set up a team for your company. Everybody who takes part can then join that team, and then you can see where you come on the day against your colleagues. So it's a really fun way of engaging your work team. And as I said, like 100% goes to charity as well.
Cool. So we could have a bit of bald guy competition here, couldn't we? Can I get further than Langdon's shin splints?
Yes. Short answer.
He's frowning at me now. Because he knows the answer.
Yes.
And the other thing to mention, actually, so this year we have a brand new sponsor. So we're being sponsored by Adidas.
Yes.
Which is great. So they are providing a free Adidas t-shirt for all participants. So if you sign up now, you'll get it before the race. But even if you sign up close to the race date, you'll still be sent a t-shirt.
So for those of you watching on video, I'm rocking last year's T-shirt, and I am known for having a bit of a T-shirt fetish. So so actually, I was really excited when I saw it was Adidas, and it's a really cool T-shirt. Sadly, I've just got the notification. Mine arrived today, so too late for me to wear today.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a shame.
Yeah, but I did also buy the rain jacket as well. So,
did you?
Yeah, so I've stepped out and bought a bit more merch.
Gold star for
there
you.
There you go. Okay. So this is a real shout out. I think it's been a fantastic conversation, but it's a real shout out to say this is an event that anybody can do. You don't have to be a runner. Anybody can do this event. And by entering it, you're absolutely making a difference, because that money is going directly to research that could be life-changing for many, many people. Emma, it's been a great conversation. Any sort of final sort of points you want to make before we wrap for today?
Just thank you so much for having me. I think I mentioned the World Run website earlier.
Yep.
If not, we'll put a link in,
yep,
I believe.
Yep.
And if you want to understand a bit more about the work that Wings for Life do, we're www.wingsforlife.com.
Yep.
And yeah, just get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
And the website, I will attest to this, has got some amazing stories on of some pretty heroic people who've dealt with some really, really tough situations. And I think one of the things we are planning to do maybe on a future pod is get one of your ambassadors on to talk about actually what it's like to live with this sort of effects of a spinal cord injury, because I think that would be a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose just what I will end with is, you know, as I talked about, it is a devastating injury. Yep. But so many of our supporters and ambassadors who live with a spinal cord injury, they're not defined by it.
Their positivity is amazing.
They go on and still continue to lead really successful, empowering lives. So, you know, they don't want anyone to have a pity party.
No.
Far from it.
Yeah.
But let's do what we can now to make an impact for the future.
Brilliant. Emma, thank you very much. It's been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you.
We will get it out there. We'll promote the World Run and all the best for the future.
Brilliant. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts. And in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days and about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.